Hello and welcome to another episode of Something Rotten. We are deep in Metal Gear Solid. We are in the middle section of Metal Gear Solid 2, which is going to go from Peter Stillman's bomb disposal to Emma's sniping mission and everything in between, but maybe not beyond there. My name is Jacob Geller. I'm joined, as always, by my co-host, Blake Hester.
Good morning, Jacob. We've been getting a few emails and comments recently asking, is Metal Gear 1 and 2 a rotten game? And look, jury's still out. We'll have more to say when we finish these games. However, I'd posit they're great additions for the Something Rotten canon based on my current feelings for that nasty little boy, Hideo Kojima, and the works he makes, which are rotten. I have impure thoughts of anger towards him.
The rotten relationship between Blake and Hideo Kojima only deepening. Blake, I was thinking, I was like, should we have like a thing, like a tagline for the podcast to be like, welcome to Something Rotten, about, because people are always asking like, what does it mean? And I'm like, about the rotten games and us little freaks who play them.
I don't know. There's a show description on podcast apps. Like, read. It says what the show's about.
Yeah, okay. That's like, it.
Come on.
Everyone, yeah. Please read. But we are so excited, tagline or not, to welcome our guest for this episode, someone who Blake and I have referenced on the show before and are both big fans of individually. A YouTube person, game composer, all around, you know, multi-artistic talent, Thor High Heels. Welcome. Hello.
Hello. It's me. I'm here. Thor.
Thor, you made a video about Metal Gear Solid literally, yeah, like as we were starting planning for this season, and it just felt like it was like, yes, finally we have, okay, a reason.
I'm sorry if I spoiled the whole game then.
Nah, don't worry about it. Don't worry about it.
Honestly, it was a really good, because the video was like kind of on like the weird bonus modes and shit, and so it was like, not, it wasn't just like, here are the things that happen in the story, but it was really good at both showing these modes that neither of us are going to play, like, we did not do the VR mission shit for MGS1, but also, like, I don't think either of us realized the depth of history that was, like, available on MGS2 until, at least I didn't, until seeing you go through it, which was, like, mind-blowing. I did not know that much was out there.
I had no idea either. I'd also never played the VR missions. I was like, oh man, who cares? I never checked out any of the bonus stuff. And I was always kind of curious about it because I'd seen like screenshots in magazines of it and you being able to place like the cyborg ninja and stuff. And I was like, okay, well, maybe I do want to know what's up with that. And it was well worth the look because there's apparently a shit ton of content there.
Yeah, the stuff you showed where you can just like use a free camera and go through every level, and then they're like design Bibles and MGS2 substance. It's like one of the craziest things I've ever seen included in a video game. I mean, I guess they have those like Karateka things, which are like, you know, interactive documentaries now, but just like shipping a game with your design Bible and all that shit is like unbelievable, especially for Konami, which I think has always been kind of weird and cagey. Had no clue any of that stuff was out there. I'm surprised people don't talk about that shit way more often.
Yeah, I wish more stuff like that existed, because that like document of MGS2 thing is very detailed. And I only learned like, I'd say like a week ago, about that like Karateka thing and stuff like that. I was like, oh my God, this is that. I want more of this.
Exactly. That Karateka thing is super cool. I think you really got to love Karateka to get a lot out of it. But it also is one of those things where like, I didn't know what Karateka was. I know Jordan Mechner, but Karateka is too deep a cut for me. But you play through it and you're like, oh, this is clearly one of the most important things to come out in the last year, just because preservation is so bad. But then it's like, damn, Konami kind of did it 22 years ago.
Yeah, well, that's, you know, because it's like the Karateka and Atari 50 and whatever, you kind of get the feeling it's like they exist because like there's no one around to fuck around with the rights for these anymore. You know, it's just like one guy who can give you his notes and then it works. And I do think that it's kind of, it's like, hey, they didn't put that shit in the new Metal Gear collection. Mm-hmm. You know, like I do think that they've kind of, we're probably a little freaked out by the transparency and like backed off, because like, I don't think that's, you know, that certainly hasn't happened with the other ones as much as Kojima has talked about them. We've never got you know, that level of access.
Probably also would have been very hard to remaster all of that, because the assets on the PS2 disc are obviously of PS2 asset quality, so they'd have to refind everything again and scan in all the notes again and get like higher res versions of it. So I think I get why they didn't do it, but it's still definitely worth like checking out.
Also, something we didn't talk about last episode is like MGS1, as far as, and the remastered collection, which is what we're playing, as far as I can tell, just a bare bones remaster of the game. MGS2 launches the PS3 version. Like, it launches and the Blue Point logo pops up, which is very strange. Oh, yeah. And I guess none of that was included with what Blue Point did, but it doesn't seem like too much was done other than being like, I guess there's a touchpad on the PS5. We should add that text in the game. So it's a super strange thing.
Yeah, I saw people post clips of that. They like re-recorded some of the codec tutorial lines to include like button prompts for like other consoles, but then it like desyncs the audio a little and it's like really messy. So when looking at that, I'm like, okay, well, the things that they did change or add are kind of janky. That doesn't necessarily fill me with a whole lot of confidence about the future collections. But
okay, hey, we'll see. Hold on, you bring that up. Jacob, when we were playing this, did you notice when Colonel is telling you how to swim that some of the voice lines sounded different?
Yeah.
Like, almost like they were AI? I'm not implying they were AI. I have no clue.
Oh.
Dude.
No. Was... Well, also, from what I know about the rest of the game, it may be fitting.
I've only noticed it once, but Colonel's voice lines, it would be like every other one would just be like a completely different tone.
No, that's interesting, because I was going to say, like, for the most part, they were just saying, like, push the action button, isn't, like, console-dependent, and so that worked. But I didn't notice that weirdness, but I'm sure that, I believe you.
Dude, it was so weird. It would be like, it'd be like, Raiden, to swim, press the action button to go up and down, point the camera up and down, and then press the action button to swim in that direction. It was fucking with me so badly.
That is really bizarre. I mean, there is... I don't want to... I'm thinking about the kind of level of history here. I don't want to romanticize any era of game development and games writing, because, like, it's all been bad in different ways. But that being said, I was doing a dive on, like, some of the writing about Metal Gear Solid 2 last night, and I was, like, losing my mind at how interesting and how much access there was. Thor, have you ever read the stuff... the interview with Agnes Kaku, who was like the sole translator on this game
years ago? I kind of skimmed through it a little bit. I'm terrible at reading articles. It's like a lot of text. It's a little overwhelming, but I have a vague idea of what's in there.
It's like, this one is particularly bad because it's on Hardcore Gaming 101, which is a site that the records like don't, or it's like the site does not function anymore. Yeah. So you need to go through archive.org, and then like the formatting on the page breaks and whatever. But it is this unbelievably transparent interview with this like woman who is 24 at the time, who translated the entire game with no oversight, was paid $5,000 for it, and like didn't sign an NDA, and so she can just say whatever she wants. And not only can she say whatever she wants, she gave like Hardcore Gaming 101 her entire working files for both Metal Gear Solid 2 and Ghost Babel, which is like so fucking crazy to just be like, look, they can't tell me to do anything.
The unfortunate thing is those files, I think, I mean, maybe you can do a deep dive and someone's backed them
I'm
up,
sure someone
not...
still has them.
The funniest part of that interview, and Jacob, I was a little curious why you were like, Blake, you gotta read this thing. I saw the files, I was like, that's interesting. But she pops off at the side of her neck about Kojima's writing.
Yeah.
And it was
yeah.
so...
That's what I know about.
Like,
yeah,
I think I have a slightly more charitable take on Kojima's writing than her. But it was a little refreshing to just have someone be like, I don't know, he kind of sucks. It's like, it was wild.
I thought, but yeah, so I was messaging Blake last night being like, you gotta read this. This is so Blake-coded. And I think part of that was that she said, she was talking about how, like, it just feels that video game storytelling is so much behind everything else that video games are doing, and was kind of just like, can you just read a book? Like, can you just read any book? And the problem with video game writers is they don't read books, they only play video games, and then they write these bad stories, which is something that, like, we have talked about before.
And I think Kojima's issue, at least back then, is I didn't get the sense he only played video games. I got the sense he only watched movies, but they were only like shitty action movies, which is something she's like, this dude's Bruckheimer, like wants to be yeah. Jerry Bruckheimer.
Well,
he probably watches like a lot of dumb movies, but maybe there's also like a bit of loss in translation there. That's kind of the impression I get sometimes.
Yeah.
Like he like takes influence yes. from movies, or like he uses a song with like lyrics that has like some words in it that match the theme, but the song isn't really yeah, about yeah. that. But he's just like, no, like I just like how it, the few words that he knows, he's like, yeah, no, this fits.
And you know, to Kojima's credit, because I also from that article read like a 7-page Tim Rogers interview with him while he was making 3, which was also, it was like, it was such good Tim Rogers writing, where he starts and he's like, my goal of this interview is to have Kojima let me wear his glasses. And then it's like, he's kind of talking about Kojima's glasses. But like, he talks about how much Kojima read, and Kojima says at one point he used to read 3 books a day, which is like, well, what does that mean? Because that's not... there, the other thing that was really interesting in that interview was she was talking about Konami and kind of the rules of the project being extremely strict with like not allowing her any more space, like no more text boxes to write things. And Japanese is just a way more dense language, and so you can like fit more information into fewer characters. And so like there is a lot of translation stuff that like even if she didn't think the original script was kind of dumb, which it sounds like she did, it was like, I literally cannot fit the things that you're saying into the text box that right, I am allowed. Yeah. And so like there's just a lot, you know, I will say I'm really enjoying this game and the writing of it, but like it is fascinating to hear someone be like, yeah, the reason that it sucks is, you know, like these 3 things about a game that is widely considered, you know, like a towering achievement of the medium.
Yeah, I mean, stuff like that was very common though. Like there's a reason like a lot of PS2 games have like really awkward truncated acting sometimes. It's because they had to fit the voice lines into the space set by the voice lines of the original Japanese. So they have to speed up how they spoke or slow it down just to fit it. Stuff, a lot of stuff like that.
It is interesting. Like the interview gets in this a little bit, but like the first game was translated by Jeremy Blaustein, who, like, as far as I understand, worked at Konami Japan. Like, I think he was on the Silent Hill 2 team. Yeah. And so, like, the interview, I think, misses that part when it's talking about all the access Jeremy had to, like, design Bibles and the script and everything. But it gets deep into how, what's her name? Agnes, right, Jacob? Like, she had nothing. Like, they wouldn't let her, like, she was, like, she lacked the context of the entire game and was basically just, like, translating effectively a Google Doc. Which is, like, I wonder if that leads to some of the stilted shit. I'll say, compared to MGS1, unfortunately, dear listener, I'm not really enjoying this game either. It's just not landing for me. But I do feel like, I don't know where the credit lies, the acting, the translating, the writing, probably a mix of all. I do feel like I am enjoying the actual storytelling in this game way more than the first game. So it's interesting to see her like reflect so negatively on the experience, because I'm like, I don't know. Compared to 1, this shit kind of hitting for me in some moments.
Yeah, but I can imagine if you're working off of like a proverbial Google Doc with no insight to anything,
right,
and you have all these weird restrictions and it's like a massive script as well. I can imagine that you look back at that and go like, man, fuck all this. Like,
and there was, you know, it's like we talked about it a little in the first episode, but it's like there was a huge backlash to this game, including, and there's so much in that interview about like, has Metal Gear Solid jumped the shark? Mm-hmm. I was like, on the second game? Like, I don't think you get to say that when there's only been 1 that you think is good. I know there was, like, the Metal Gear series before Solid. But, like, you know, now... And we have this conversation with seemingly every Metal Gear game, other than 3, which I think was very well received upon release. But, like, you know, 4, people were like, he's fucking lost it. And then 5 was like, it's out of control. And it, like, you know, we keep having the same conversations about if this one is bad. Yeah. And then, like, 10 years later, we decide that it was good.
When did that interview come out, by the way? Because Kenji Ino is still alive but it didn't seem super old.
I think it was like 5 or 6 years after the game released was the impression I got. Maybe like 4 years.
You sure? Because MGS4.
Oh, it's you're not right. Yeah. Okay, I'm pulling it up. We'll see.
It's not the most important thing. Don't worry about it.
Thor, one thing that I am curious about, and this is just it was 2011 was when the interview was. One of your things on your channel is kind of finding like weird Japan exclusive PS2 games or PS3 games and kind of going through them. Okay, first question, do you speak Japanese?
No, not at all.
So what is your experience kind of like? Do you just kind of muddle your way through those things? Have you kind of figured out strategies to make it through when you don't speak the language?
Well, as a kid, I had a PlayStation 1 that had like a mod chip in it, so I could play like burnt discs. And so even back then, I would sometimes just get discs of games that were in Japanese or whatever. So that kind of endeared me to that whole experience of just kind of just like blindly exploring something I don't really understand, quote unquote, and just kind of like making my way through it that way. And what I do in the videos is just simply report my findings. I'm not really trying to be like super like actual factual about it. I'm just like, yeah, no, this happened and then this happened and I don't know what this is, but it looked pretty cool. And so that's just kind of how I do it. But I usually play him for like a couple hours and then I get stuck and it's like, okay, well, that was good enough. I have my fun.
What was like the first way that you played the Metal Gear series? Did you start in English? Did you start when you were a kid? Like, what was your kind of exposure?
I started with Twin Snakes on the GameCube, the remake of the first game. Hell, that's what I started with. And then I got MGS2. And I was just stuck on a tanker for a long time because I was a dumb kid and didn't know what I was doing. And then I saw that there was a Metal Gear Solid on the PS1. I was like, ooh, what's this? And I bought it. And then it was just the Twin Snakes, but it was ugly and I was so disappointed. It was old. I was like, man, what's this? I hate this. And then I sold it again.
You're like, he doesn't even do a rocket kick for
it. That was legit my reaction. But that and from then on, I just kept buying them as they came out, basically.
You have an entire retrospective series, too, that listeners should go look at. That's like, correct me if I'm wrong, is it every single Metal Gear game?
Basically, I talk about like the PSP stuff and the mobile games. There's like an N-Gage Metal Gear Solid game that I talk about. I talk about pretty much all of it.
Did you do Survive as well?
Yeah.
I got to go watch that one. I haven't seen that.
I'm so curious about that game, but don't want to play it.
Did Jake ever talked about the time I was assigned to work? Did Polygon was doing this story where they wanted to know who worked on Metal Gear Survive from the Metal Gear Solid 5 team. And me being a lowly freelancer, my dear friend, Matt Leone, who I'm sure is not listening so I can indict him to the fullest extent of the law here, was like, I don't want to play that game. I just need someone to play it and get to the end credits and catalog every name in the credits so we can compare them to the end. And that fell on me.
Did you really?
Let me tell you what happened. That game, I couldn't get a pre-release version of the game, which ended up working in my favor. That game I found inscrutable. Could not deal with it. I fucking suffered through like a day and a half of it, and then finally someone on YouTube uploaded a full playthrough, and that's how
I was gonna be like, that's the solution.
Yeah. And then at the end of the day, I still messed all the credits up and Polygon had to do a bunch of work fixing my spreadsheet. But nevertheless, you know, I was like 23 at the time. Cut me some slack.
I know our friend Suriel Vasquez, who's been on the show, I think he actually played through the whole thing and was like, the end boss of that game is kind of crazy, though, for reasons that are like almost completely inscrutable.
I played through the whole game. I sort of like it, not in a I enjoy playing it all that much, but just in a just beholding the absurd spectacle of it and where the game goes and just how much they do with the no budget that they had. And it goes to some strange places, and you can tell that they were really trying to write it sort of Kojima-y, but weren't Kojima. And so there's a lot of like, oh, the funny, silly robot makes a pee-pee-poo-poo joke. But it feels very uncanny, the entire game, and I kind of like that about it. But it is definitely not the best.
Didn't Masahiro Ito do a lot of designs for that game?
Yeah, he designed one monster for it, which is that big worm thing that's kind of like roaming about.
Gotcha.
Well, look, if you're going to ask Ito to make one thing, ask him to make a big worm thing that roams around.
Though I don't think he designed the big worm thing that roams around in Silent Hill 3, so interestingly enough.
Well, that one, they just looked at a picture of male anatomy, and they were like, I know what I'm going to do with that.
Come on.
One other thing that is both kind of related to the interview with the translator, and also I just want to bring up because it's so weird. One of my favorite YouTube videos of last year was by the channel GameChamp3000, who usually does, like, kind of challenge runs, like, can you beat Mario without jumping whatever. Yeah. But she released a video that was about Metal Gear Solid Ghost Babel, which is a Game Boy game where you just kind of do a bunch of little missions, and then you do all these missions, and then there are a bunch of, like, extra bonus ones, and they're weird, and they have, like, Donkey Kong in them and stuff. But then the last one, like, when you beat the last one, which is, she reckons, an achievement that basically no one did, it says, like, hey, good job, you're finally ready for the mission, Raiden. And that game came out before Metal Gear Solid 2. And so it was, like, technically a reveal that Raiden was there, but just, like, because no one ever played that far in the game, it didn't mean anything, and no one talks about it.
It's like an alternate universe, too, so it's kind of like, it's like an alternate universe Raiden reveal before the actual Raiden
reveal.
Yeah,
it's, like, technically non-canon. Yeah. Very, very weird. It's just funny to kind of go back and do these things, and Metal Gear Solid has so many threads that you can kind of pull it apart forever. That being said, let's talk about the game. When last we left off, we had just met Peter Stillman, a bomb disposal expert, and Fat Man, a guy, had put bombs all over Big Shell, and they're going to blow up and send it into the sea, and so we went off to find them. And that's kind of the first bit of this game here, which is just kind of this weird scavenger hunt that seems designed to kind of get you to go into every, like, section of Big Shell, because it's just kind of like... It's this very interesting design where it's just kind of like there are like 8 rooms, and each room is divided from the others by this like long kind of gangplank that you walk over. And it's like, I guess it's just a good way of letting you get to know it. And then they put all the bombs in the weird places. But like, I thought it was kind of fun just because it was like a little offbeat, and I don't think it's very like challenging to make your way around these places, and so it was just this fun little like explore the weirdo areas they've made.
Yeah, if I feel like similar to MGS1, we're just dealing with a set piece generator, and it's your mileage will vary based on whether or not you enjoy the set pieces. I did like this one a lot. Finding the one in the bathroom was really fun for me, and then going into the room with that Vamp was in, and then be like, put the room back the way it should be, and then you find it behind the door. I was like, that's all clever shit. Jacob, with this section, which was considerably longer, and Thor, you having beat the game, I'm curious your thoughts. Having to record a podcast about it that ostensibly will talk about its themes and everything, were you struggling with a bit with a lot of this section, just being like, this is just MGS1 again, and where do I sink my teeth into what's happening? And then granted, we hit the misinfo campaign later, but I spent a lot of this section just kind of floundering, being like, okay, where do I get to the substance? I guess pun intended here.
Uh-huh.
I mean, for me, it's like so long ago since I first played it that it's hard to say if I struggled with it. Like you just mentioned, like there's a hint there where it's like, put the room back as how it was. I don't even know that, because I just instinctively know where the bomb is. So I just run through the whole Big Shell and do all the bombs.
I mean, I guess it's got me like wondering, like a more direct question here is like, I'm kind of spoiled on the game. Just like, I have a vague idea of what the game is about. But like, if you were playing this with no preconceived notions of this game, like how do you think it would hit you? Just being like, wait, this is literally beat for beat the first game.
It's one of those things that I feel like is maybe hard to put ourselves in that headspace, like in retrospect, because I think I would be so thrilled. I think this game is so much more fun than Metal Gear Solid 1. I think it controls so much better, and the like enemy interactions are so much more interesting, that I think I would actually just kind of be like, oh my god, it's like, you know, it's like that part in MGS1, but now there's like so much more depth to how I go around it.
God, yeah, I wonder, like, because I feel like I'm the opposite, where it's like, because I know to expect something, I'm charitably like, okay, here's the Nikita section, we have to do all this again. But I do feel like if I didn't know something was coming, I would be really thinking this whole thing was, like, very rote by this point. Just being like, what the fuck are we doing?
The Nikita and the electric hallway, that was the part where I was like, it's just this? Like, we just have another electric hallway? A lot of my notes from the section are kind of on, like, random little pieces rather than, like, big structural things. Like, My first thought is, Rose is fucking dumb. She thought King Kong was about the Chrysler building.
Yeah,
did you get this?
Idiot lady. Come on.
Where it's like, you know, but it is one of these things that, like, Patrick was talking about last week, where it's like, you call Rose and you just have a conversation about, like, their relationship that's completely not related to the game. But it's like, she thought it was King Kong climbed the Chrysler building, and Ryan was like, no, you're thinking of Godzilla. And then they laughed, and Ryan says, we watched King Kong a bunch of times that night. And I was like, you watched it a bunch of times?
It's a good movie, but it's not a,
which,
it's not
which
a
actually
three in
was,
a row.
It was one of my biggest laughs in that section, because I don't know, I don't think this was intended, but I was crossing the bridge where there were claymores, and I had gotten a call just before that was like, hey, there are claymores. Yeah. Be sure to use the minesweeper. But then I got that call from Rose, and I was so distracted that I just walked right into the mine and exploded.
Here's where my MGS1 knowledge worked out for me. I did not have the mine detector. And I was like, I bet if I go prone and crawl, I'll just pick up all of them. And by God,
bro,
that worked
pro
for
shit.
Me. The thing that made me laugh the hardest, though, was a really tiny mechanical thing where I tried to somersault up a staircase. And of course, you can't. You just fall. And I thought that was a brilliant little touch. Shouts out, Kojima. You did a good one.
What's really interesting to me as well is, like, taking it back to, like, the repeating of the things MGS1 does. I have played, like, all the games in the series, and, like, Metal Gear 1, and especially Metal Gear 2, do all those things, too. The Nikita, the electric floor, the gas mask, the mine. Someone calls you, and it's like, hey, Snake, there's mines here. All of that is in those games, too, and it's also in Ghost Babel. So when you play the whole series in order, by the time you get to MGS2, you've played, like four games that are all basically like that. It's very mysterious. It's like they had, like, these like design ideas, and they kept iterating on them slightly and doing them over and over to kind of get to, like, the best versions of them or some shit. It's kind of fascinating to see.
Yeah, isn't also, like, Metal Gear Solid 1 is also doing a lot that the original Metal Gear was doing.
Yeah.
Right? Like,
oh yeah, I think that's what Thor was saying. It was like Metal Gear 1.
Yeah,
and
Metal Gear
1.
Oh, did I say Solid on accident?
Okay.
I'm sorry if I did.
No, I think you said
it right.
Okay, so how we feel about that? Is that bankruptcy of creativity, or does, I don't know, if you were a long, long time fan at this point, by the time MGS2's reveals hit, do you think that, like, lands so much harder?
Well, I feel like it is kind of the conflict of this game is, like, is it interesting to make Raiden pretend to be Snake and do all this shit that Snake did? Is, like, I think you can read that as very intentional, and I've got more notes on kind of, like, specific things, but that falls apart a little if it was also in Metal Gear 1 and 2, because then it doesn't feel like it just feels like they only have, like, four ideas and they put them in every game.
Yeah, I mean, we're obviously gonna have to circle back next episode when we, like, have the whole picture, but it's something I'm, like, constantly wrestling with, where I'm like, is this smart or fucking stupid? Which is kind of the Kojima experience, really, is playing one of his games, be like, you smart or dumb right now? I don't know.
A part that I really liked kind of thematically is you're doing this bomb disposal thing, and you keep finding bombs in weird places, and Stillman calls you and is like, this doesn't make any sense. Why would he put a bomb in the bathroom? Like, that's not a structural place. And then Pliskin is also finding bombs, and, like, he finds the real ones that are, like, in the support legs that would actually destroy it. And it immediately feels like, oh, Snake is getting to do the actual shit, and we're running around finding these bombs that are, like, completely meaningless. And I feel like they are kind of, like, forgive me, they're, like, cucking Raiden in his own game, you know? Like, they're not letting him do the cool things.
I didn't even think about that. That's really interesting. Also, like, think about MGS1 calling to save. Mei Ling gives you some, like, inspirational quote to be like, yeah, fuck yeah, I'm out here. Mm-hmm. I'm going to do this. And then Rose just berates you for being a shitty boyfriend.
Rose is like, you never let yourself get close to me.
Yeah. Jacob, that's cool. That's why we pay you the big bucks. Good thought there.
That's right. And so then, there's a lot that happens here. Somewhere along this line, you get... Okay, so Snake discovers the real bombs. We need to get to the other bomb. Raiden, he's not going to be able to do it. He has to go take out Fat Man. Stillman says, I can do it. I can run. They're like, what are you talking about? You have a prosthetic leg. He says, no, I actually faked that I had this prosthetic leg because I was so ashamed that I wasn't injured in this bomb explosion that I failed to defuse a bomb. It killed a bunch of people. And I pretended that I was, like, hurt by it. What? I don't know what to make of this plot point.
Jacob, luckily, I'm here to help. It's bad writing.
Yeah.
It's just bad writing.
The fact that it all happens, like, in a call as well. She's, like, over the phone. Mm-hmm. She's like, oh, no, I was just kind of full of shit. I'm going to do it now. And then, like, he's just kind of gone after that. It's like, well, okay.
I also, like, it's so... And this is a place where it's like, I fully believe this is just kind of like cliches, and it also feels like it suffers a little for like the English condensing of where Rose calls you after and she's like, what the fuck was up with that guy? Why would he lie about that? And Raiden's like, you know, we all have our own secrets. And she's like, Raiden, you're right. It's like, then just kind of resolve it. How are you, Thor, when you play this game, when you played it a million times, do you have, like, a lethal, non-lethal, stealthy, guns blazing, like, do you have kind of a typical way that you run through it?
Yeah, with MGS2, I usually just put it to very easy mode and just, like, run through it and just murder kill everyone and throw people off of the bridges and choke them out and whatever and just have fun with it with the, when you get, like, the AK and just running around shooting and shit. I play it very much Rambo mode. It's also with... There's a few bosses near the end that are quite difficult on normal and stuff like that. And so because of that, I'm usually like, nah, I don't want to deal with that this time. So I just set it to very easy always. It's different per game, but two is a very easy game for me. Very easy mode.
Jacob, are you killing people?
Well, that was my next note here, is I had been tranking everyone, including like I non-lethal Olga, which I guess you have to, but also like Fat Man. But I was using a pistol, like a, you know, the SOCOM, to take out one of the UAVs, and then a guy saw me, and without switching, I just shot him in the head, and I was like, well, there goes my no-kill run. And so, and then I've been a little more generous with it.
I'm still tranking everyone, but the sniper section with Emma, I realized you don't have to play that. You can just call Snake and he'll do it for you. But he kills people, so I'm wondering if there is a
Trank sniper that you can find.
Yeah, but I just didn't want to do it.
Oh, right.
Because you have to keep taking the diazepam. I guess it's not diazepam in this game, but whatever it is. And then you call Snake and he's like, don't worry, bro. I got you. And I was like, all right. Easy. Done. So I don't know if that's going to count against my no-kill run. Because all those dudes fucking died.
Well, and did you non-lethal, like, vamp?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Wow. I grenade launchered his ass.
No, non-lethal. It was really annoying. It took forever.
But we appreciate your approach to pacifism.
Okay, but here's something I've been wondering. There are all the monologues when you kill bosses in the first game. Are those just not in this game? Or because I'm putting them to sleep, they don't have their death monologue?
No.
Okay. Okay.
So it's not really like that.
Yeah, I was confused, actually, because I non-lethaled Fat Man, and then he still was, like, bleeding when and I was like, I could literally see, like, 20 Trank darts in his head, because they stay there, and so he was just roller skating around, and he was just, like, a pincushion.
Yeah, but then after the cutscene, he's asleep. You know, they just don't want to make two cutscenes. Yeah. I don't know what to tell you, Jacob. Limited memory on those DVDs.
Okay, yeah, so, Raiden disarms one bomb, but it was booby-trapped, and that sets off the other one. And so Stillman is like, I gotta go down there, I've gotta do it. There's a microwave trap, which is something that comes back in 4, because there's a big microwave hallway in that game. But actually, this was one of my favorite parts of like characterization is that Stillman blows the fuck up. Stillman just like dies defusing this bomb, and Raiden starts freaking out in a way that I thought was like, I was like, I am getting this character, where it's like, you know, Snake hardened, whatever, unfazed by everything. Raiden had kind of been pretending to be that, and then when Stillman dies, he starts calling like Campbell and Rose, and he's like, we are so screwed, our guy died, what do we do? And I just like, I liked that he was, it was kind of showing that he had only done VR missions and had no exposure to this sort of thing.
Oh yeah, no, yeah, he's definitely kind of a bit more player stand-in-y in some way. You're supposed to relate to him more, but I feel like maybe that kind of backfired a little bit at the time, because a lot of people were like, oh, this guy's like a wussy, he's not cool like Snake. But but he's definitely more human than Snake is, who's just like a gruff, cool guy who doesn't give a fuck about shit. And Raiden, no,
do y'all feel like there's almost in the game script the expectation of all the player disappointment for Raiden?
I think that he is certainly supposed to seem like lesser, you know, yeah. like that he's supposed to seem kind of less cool. So I feel like it's the weird thing is like they probably expected people to think that he was kind of a loser, which seems intended, but not be so kind of media illiterate that they then thought the game sucked because they made them play as a guy who was less cool.
Sure. I just occasionally I get the sense that it's like, I feel like they knew, not the backlash, right? But like, I feel like the game is written around like the disappointment of Raiden in ways that I find very compelling.
He is supposed to be kind of like a second fiddle to Snake. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Like it would be so easy to just make Snake the hero again and him be doing even cooler shit than the first game. But like, I like the idea that Raiden is, as Jacob so eloquently put it, getting cucked throughout this game.
Yeah, I was playing some of this with Annie sitting next to me, and she snorted when Raiden says, priority my butt, they're all in danger about the hostages. Where it's like, he really feels like he's gonna get mad at Dad, but he's still afraid to like use curse words. Before you fight Fat Man, you have this this boss fight against Fortune, which was kind of unexpected, where you have to go down to one of the struts to defuse one of the bombs, and then Fortune shows up with a railgun, and I do you just wait this one out? Is there like something to do other than just kind of waiting? Because I was trying to not kill her, and then eventually like Vamp just showed up.
She if you listen to what she says, she's like expecting to see Snake, and she's like, Snake, put me down, kill me. Then it's not Snake, and then Raiden can't do it because he's not Snake. I think that's kind of the idea that they're playing with there. So yeah, you do just kind of have to hide and be Raiden and just kind of sit there.
I do really like, I like her design so much, and maybe that makes me just like her character more. But I some of the lines she has where it's like, lucky in war and nothing else, and it's like, oh, that's why you're called Fortune. She tells Raiden, you've seen the fires of hell, haven't you? Which I thought was a weird line, because I was like, well, Raiden hasn't seen anything, but I guess he was like a child soldier is kind of his other backstory, which is maybe also a reveal. Like he keeps not telling Rose anything about his childhood. But I really like the thing that happens afterwards, which is that he's shooting at her and Vamp shows up, and one of the bullets just swerves around her, because all of the bullets swerve around her, and just hits Vamp in the fucking head. And then she's like very sad, even though Vamp is totally fine. But I just like the idea of kind of Vamp catching a stray because she can't be hit by bullets for some reason.
I like that it stays in his head for hours. Yeah. Later cutscenes, it's just still there. He's just rocking it like a piece of jewelry. Dude rocks. I love Vamp.
He's a cool guy. And then we go up and fight Fat Man. Man's on roller skates. Yeah. Can you believe it?
He has
it?
A wine glass with him, too.
Oh, yeah. And like a straw?
Yeah, with a
right?
straw in it. How dare you? I'm an artist. Oh. And he throws it on the ground.
What's going on with this dude?
I don't know, but I love that scene. It's so
what
wacky.
What are we doing?
Because he gets like built up, like Stillman is all like, oh, he was bullied and I care for him and he was like a son to me. And then he appears, he's this wacky guy on roller skates.
he's like a Kids Next Door villain. Yeah. Like he had a line where he said he used to hang out at department store counters, and I was like, what? I don't understand the connection to the rest of his character.
I don't know what that means either.
I missed that. I don't remember that at all.
Yeah, he says he hung out at like a store of like a clockmaker, I think, is what he mentions, and he watched him make clocks.
Oh, and that's right. How he got
infatuated with bombs and stuff like that.
Okay, maybe I misheard him.
I think
him.
Is what he said.
There's a lot of his dialogue that I do think is actually fairly clever in the, like, talking about the nuclear bomb way, because it's, you know, like, the unsaid thing is, like, okay, Fat Man is the name of, like, the, you know, one of the nuclear bombs dropped on Japan. And so he says, like, Fat Man and Little Boy. See Oppenheimer in theaters now.
It's not in theaters.
But he says like he's the greatest humanity has to offer and the lowest, which is like an interesting thing to kind of talk about, you know, the nuclear bombs with. And so it's like there's cool stuff going on there, but his character is so almost like overstimulated.
Yeah.
You know, he's just so much.
Yeah, I feel like that's a common thread in this game where. I don't know. The trademark style is like, of course Fat Man has to be so much. But then it's like, where is the substance? Probably not in that time. But like, at what point are you overshadowing the substance? You know what I'm saying? Like, I don't know. And maybe I just have fucking idiot brain. But like, when a guy's on rollerblades and being that goofy, like, sometimes it's hard for me to pay attention to, like, the nitty-gritty of what they're saying. And that feels like sometimes a common problem in this game. It's like, there are really interesting ideas in it. Where, like, especially when we're going to get to the Arsenal misinfo campaign, which I think is, like, really cool and people have talked about a lot. But it's also tucked into, like, 20 minutes of people talking about the what are they called? The Liberty?
The Patriots.
And it's like, I don't give a fuck. And so it's like, sometimes all this stuff is like too hidden under like espionage or like humor that I think an editor would have stripped back. You know, like Fat Man would not need to talk about clocks for 10 minutes before we get to like what he has that's interesting to say. And I think like, it's an unfortunate part of this game that I think by the time I get to what I like of it and what I actually want to think about and kind of unpack, I've had to sit through so much shit I don't care about because Kojima has so much in his head. He's like desperate for you to like know that he knows.
Yeah. I'm like fucked up in this sense, I think, because like a thing Jacob mentioned earlier of like video game writers, they only play video games and don't read books. I'm kind of like that. Yeah. So I'm just like, well, I like Kingdom Hearts. I like the Yakuza games. I'm so used to like weird tonal shifts like this or like really odd dialogue or weird voice acting that it just kind of phases right through me. I don't even notice it anymore. I'm just like, yeah, this is Metal Gear. It's like Fat Man, he has the wine glass. He talks about his thing. You get into a phone call in the game and it's like 2 hours long. It's fine. I like it.
I agree with you. Like, it's a tricky thing because if you take away all the goofy shit of Fat Man, like, the game starts to lose a lot of its, like, trademark, right? Like, we remember Fat Man because he's fucking weird, not because he has interesting things to say about, like, nuclear bombs. But I do think those things, like, run up against each other when you're, like, trying to actually sit and unpack the game. And it's like, I don't know, the solution would just be to play it a second time. And then
it's probably a lot to all take in one playthrough. I can definitely see
exactly.
That. I think it's also like Kojima, his first two like big games that he like wrote and directed were like sort of like visual novel adventure games, point and clicky sort of games like Snatcher and Police Knots, where you can examine the couch and then learn about the company that made the couch and the technology of the space couch and this and that. And I think he just never stopped writing that way. But it's not an adventure game. You can't examine Fat Man, so he just has to say all of it.
Yeah, and I think, I mean, it's like, I've been waiting to read the kind of analytical essays on this until I've beat the game. You know, it's like, I want to read Ed and Reed's articles on it. I want to read Harper's article. You know, it's like, a lot of people have had a long time to reflect, and I think part of the challenge is, like, you know, taking it all in the first time and trying to turn it into something meaningful, especially when, like, I'm not super clear. I mean, it's like, I have ideas, but I don't know exactly where it's going to end. And so it's like, I'm looking forward to getting that that hindsight from other people.
I think it can also be difficult to, like, know in the moment what is okay to, like, strip back when thinking about this game. Where it's like, it's like, I don't know, the Patriots, I get it, shadowy cabal that runs the government, but it's like, do I need to be thinking more about that? Do I need to be thinking about more about Fat Man's wine glass? Like, what is it I need to sink my teeth into here to get...
Right, yeah, you don't know what's important yet.
Exactly, yeah. Like, to get to the meat of Kojima's ideas, which, like, if you're playing a Kojima game, he has so many fucking ideas about everything that it's like, it's hard to know which thread to, like, pay the most attention to in these games.
I want to read a couple quotes from this Tim Rogers story on Kojima, because he talks about both, like, writing it and what he kind of thinks of games as, which I think is, like, really interesting. And so he says at one point, "The story of Metal Gear Solid 2, Kojima claims, is not a postmodern literary statement. It's merely a jumble of things inspired by current events, infused with characters from Japanese giant robot animation and action sequences from the writer's favorite American movies. It's inspired by the times and engaging to people living in these times. It's played as a game to reveal storyline bits which spur the player to play more." So it's like, I do like the idea that he's like, it's just a bunch of things that I've been thinking about. You know, like... And kind of be maybe because he made it in a very postmodern time, it kind of becomes postmodern almost like through nature of that.
I really got that impression from that document of Metal Gear thing, and also seeing like all the things that the dev team had to say about the game too and how they reflected upon it. There's a lot of stuff in that game people attribute to being like, well, it's kind of like forward thinking or this and that, or like, well, he predicted things or stuff like that, but... No, a lot of that was just stuff that was already kind of happening back then and kind of in the public conscious, and he just sort of wrote about it and had some thoughts about it and had fun with it and wore his influences on his sleeve and just kind of ended up with an interesting game in that sense. But I fully agree with what Tim is saying there, yeah.
Yeah, he also, there's some really weird, it's again, it's weird playing this game 20 years after it came out and reading some of these quotes where he says, Kojima agrees with them. "Games aren't literature," he tells me simply. "Games are experiences you have. The most important parts of games aren't the works themselves. The DVDs containing Metal Gear Solid 2 will someday deteriorate, and the PS2s to play the games will vanish." He says, here's where I want to say that Metal Gear Solid is a game that someone will be able to play in 20 years and appreciate. I know, however, that Kojima will deny it. He's told me he does not intend for the original Metal Gear Solid to live on. That's why a dream team of writers and game designers are working on narrative essays that will be collected into a book about Metal Gear Solid that explains how the game made each participant feel. Ooh. I don't know if that book ever came out. Maybe it's just exclusive to Japan.
Yeah.
But it is so weird that he's talking about these things being like, they are passing. They are temporary. You know, it's just about like moments, which is not how our... I mean, it is kind of how the industry operates because we're terrible at preserving things, but it's also not because I'm playing the Metal Gear Solid HD collection.
That's interesting.
Anyway, fascinating.
I don't know if those books exist or not. I have no idea.
And look, all I can say is I hope they're written by other people writing about Metal Gear Solid and not Kojima, because as we've said, we have his book and it's not good.
Okay, but here's the thing I keep running into, Jacob. You're striking at my fucking thing playing these games. I can't get past. There's a lot of genius shit in Metal Gear Solid games. Sure. There's a lot of genius shit in Death Stranding, one of my all-time favorite games. And yet, what did you just say about Kojima's writing? It's fucking dog shit. So it's like, how do you even talk about that?
Well,
do you understand
what
I'm saying here?
Yes, I think that he is actually, unlike Agnes, who said that he's like not good at characters and kind of derivative with plot lines, I think that conceptually he is a really interesting writer and thinks about things a lot. I think that his book is bad because he's writing about other stuff that he likes and he is not really able to articulate like insightful thoughts about those. But I don't think that means that like he's not, you know, I am enjoying, like, I think there is a lot in this game that I am like really into from a narrative point of view, and I do give him credit for that.
But like, as I've said numerous times, is like, I do think conceptually he's great, like he has really great ideas, but the moment to moment of it I find so rough sometimes. I don't exactly know what my question here is or talking point is, but it like these games have become impossible for me to even think about because I'm constantly wrestling with the creator, which is maybe the fucking point. Like, he's making a sequel about how sequels are annoying, you know. Mm-hmm. Like, maybe he wants you to fucking be mad at him in some way, but it's like,
yeah. And it's worth saying, even in that interview, he was like, you should write in bold font, no more Metal Gear games for Hideo. And it's like, he didn't want to make 3.
Yeah.
But then he did. And he said at one point, he kind of conceptualized the series like James Bond, where it would just be like Snake is a character and different people do different things with him. And so it is, you know, he does seem somewhat trapped. You know, it's like he's trapped in the medium because he talks about like, well, I wanted to write books, but like I couldn't think of anything new to write in a book that someone hadn't already done. And so that's why he's making games. He wanted to make movies. It was really hard to make movies, you know, and it was easier to become a game director. I'm not saying that, like, games are his third choice, but it doesn't ever feel like he thought of himself as a guy who would only make video games, and certainly not video games about the same characters, you know, just, like, 5 of them in a row, or 9. Yeah,
you can tell from, like, Metal Gear Solid 3 the most, but all of them kind of have this, is that you can tell that there was a desire to make something that wasn't Metal Gear, but just kind of had to be crowbarred into the Metal Gear canon and framework and whatever to kind of fit in there. But he definitely wanted to do more other things as well, I'm pretty sure.
Let's talk about some of the interesting mechanical stuff that happens here. There's a room full of hostages, and one of them has a pacemaker. And so you've got to both dress up as one of the guards, find an AK, smash a dude's head against the retinal scanner so you can get in, and then get like a directional mic, all so you can go and like listen to a bunch of guys' heartbeats, and one of them sounds different. And I thought, this is great. Like, I love that shit.
Yeah, this shit rocks. It's so fucking funny, dude. I love...
Yeah, the heartbeat goddamn thing is actually something that they did first in VR missions in the first game. There's, like, a mission there where you have to find a criminal, and he's, like, nervous, so you have to listen really up close to him to like, scope out his heartbeat of who is anxious, and that must be the guy then.
Oh, wow.
It's kind of fun to see that then reused and kind of, like, built upon with, like, this whole big idea and context around it with the mic and the retinal scanner and stuff like that.
This,
it's really neat.
This moment also introduces one of my favorite little things in this game, because it's a directional microphone.
I know what you're going to say. Yeah.
Yeah, you'll often have to use it to listen into conversations, and as people move around, the subtitles will get smaller as they get quieter. And I was like, that's fucking brilliant.
It's so
cool. Did y'all hear the pooping guy in that scene?
No.
You have to listen to... It's after you find the guy with the pacemaker, and then there's like, it's like Ocelot and Olga and Solidus, they're like talking, and you monitor them with the microphone, but if you veer way off to the left, you can hear someone taking a shit in the bathroom. You can just listen to the whole thing.
Of course.
I missed that.
And that's why it's a 10 out of 10, folks. Exactly. So we find out some of the plan here, like Ocelot, Liquid Ocelot's plan, because also, yes, obviously, it's like, they say, so Raiden is obsessed with Snake not being dead, and Campbell and Rose keep telling him that he's dead, and they're like, we exhumed Snake's body, DNA showed it was him, but he's missing his right arm, and I was like, I put this together 4 hours ago, but, so like, yeah, Liquid's arm, on Revolver Ocelot, they've got a plan to detonate a nuke in the atmosphere over Manhattan to create an EMP effect, basically wipe out all the electronics, and then create like a home base there. Yeah, kind of like the end of Fight Club, if you think about it.
Here's the thing. I currently live 3 miles from Wall Street. I think we should do that, frankly. You ever been down there? I think, just go for it. I know this game was saying maybe this is a bad thing. I'm here to say, good thing. Let's do it. I'm on board. Blow them up.
I you know, I like that it is just kind of a take it. I mean, it truly is. It's very Tyler Durden-y. It's, you know, like, take it back to zero. You know, let's go back to primitive man where we can all hang out.
What do you think Kojima thinks of Fight Club?
Let's get into this. I bet he loves it.
He would. He fucking... What do you think he thinks of Guts Polinick's other masterwork.
I'm sure he's read it. Someone should ask him about it. Okay, then there's another little mechanical thing here where you get the sniper, and before you have to shoot any person with it, you've got to shoot a bunch of bombs on a bridge. It's kind of fun. I like that there's one behind you and there's one attached to a little drone.
Dude, I was so hard-headed in this moment. I was like, no, I did this in MGS1. I'm not backtracking for this fucking sniper. And so I used the pistol and I shot all of them.
Wow.
And then
oh finally, my God.
And then, well, except for the one on the drone. And I was like, all right, I'll go get it. But I was refusing to the last possible second to go back.
I mean, that seems like some speedrun tech. Right? Like, they probably never get the sniper.
At the very least, the walk isn't that far in the Big Shell compared to Shadow Moses.
It's really not that bad. But also, I don't know how you would do that Emma section without the sniper.
I think, actually, if you don't have one, there's just one there. You can pick it up right away.
Oh, so I didn't have to backtrack. I should have stuck in my guns.
You should have kept at it.
You could have kept at it.
You're that little meme of the guy turning around right before he hits the diamonds. That's you.
I was so mad. I was like, you are not making me do this. But that fucking drone, too much for me.
And then immediately after this is actually a part that I really like. Oh, it's a boss fight, but it's also like a story boss fight where Snake is like, we got to get out of here. I've got a helicopter, you know, I'll come pick you up. And Campbell and Rose are just yelling at him. That it's like he's not Snake, and even if he is Snake, he's the leader of a terrorist group and you can't trust him. And Raiden is like, look, you know, I just feel he's kind of doing the anti-VR training. He's like, there isn't a logical reason to this. You just got to trust me. I'm here. I'm like boots on the ground and I know that this is solid Snake. And so he's kind of he is adopting Snake's philosophy of like, you have to be there in real life and feeling things and trusting your gut. And then fucking who should show up but a man who claims to be Solid Snake, and David Hayter screams from the helicopter, no, that is not Solid Snake, which I was like pumping my fist. I was so excited.
Yeah, that's like an iconic voice line now.
I said, that's the fucking president. I listened to the post-credit stinger at MGS1. They'll come to find out. Motherfucker had to resign, but I was like, I'm about to kill the president. That was okay. So this is, I thought this was going an interesting path. You're searching for the president when Solidus shows up. I'm like, oh, the president's here. Turns out that's not what actually happens, but for a moment I thought it was really interesting that the game's final boss was just gonna be the president of the United States.
Yeah, but
I mean, you
end up killing
the president, but it wasn't as cool as I thought it was going to be.
Yeah, and he has like a muscle suit. He can kind of like bulk up and whatever. So he's Solidus. He jumps onto a Harrier, and then you fight the Harrier in what I thought was honestly a very sick fight.
It rocked. It was so cool. Head empty, no thoughts. Good boss.
That's
fight.
It. It's cool.
How did? On like a non-lethal, how did you trank the Harrier?
I didn't. but they don't die at the end of the cutscene. True, so the game had my back.
Harriers don't have souls. They're okay. And then Metal Gear jumps out of the water and catches it. And I was also pumping my fist at this point. And Vamp starts running on the water. And it's like after a while of like not doing that much big stuff in this game, this is like a big scene that really got me going.
I love that the robot makes like dinosaur sounds and stuff.
We had a whole discussion about this last week where Blake was like, why does it need to roar? And me and our guest Patrick Willems were both like, because it's cool.
Yeah, it's just I'm not denying it's cool. I just think for a game that over explains everything, it's missing a 20-minute explanation of why Metal Gear roars.
So I think in MGS5 there's like this whole stuff about like evolution in Peace Walker 2 about like how like creatures came out of the ocean and learned to walk and became bipedal or bipedal. They say both across various games. I'm not sure what the pronunciation is. So there's something there about like evolution and stuff like that. but also it was probably just cool.
It is cool. I'm not going to take that away from them. It's cool when it roars. I like a good Metal Gear. I think we should also make them in real life.
But when it roars, then it can catch the Harrier.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, yeah.
It's got to be able to open its little mouth.
No, it's not the opening of the mouth that is the issue, Jacob. I understand why that it can open its mouth. That's fine. It's got a laser beam in there. The roar, we have to acknowledge, needs some more workshop.
Okay, so there's some more stuff that happens here. Raiden gets pissed on. We all have a good chuckle at that.
It's like that scene in American Pie 1 where Stifler gets peed on from the top balcony at the party. Was that a good thing to interrupt you to say, Jacob? What are you glad?
Yeah, well, when did American Pie come out? Because, I mean,
it was
Kojima
before this,
must have
for
seen
sure.
It.
It was before this, for sure. It was like
1999. Damn. He finished making Metal Gear Solid 1. He saw American Pie. He said, I have an idea. We need to make a second.
I think what's cool about the piss as well is that, like, there's like a demo build of MGS2 that has like this whole sequence where the boat blows up and Snake has to escape from it and has like water physics in there. But they scrapped it because Kojima said it wasn't fun and also had like a lot of technical issues. But those water physics, they did not go unused, because right there.
Yeah, it's like, that's real piss.
A full display. Got the pee stream. Got the pee physics. They did it.
There's a lot of pee stuff in these games, huh?
There sure is. Yeah.
They really luxuriate in Emma pissing her pants about an hour later in this game.
Well, that's to remind us that she's, you know, Otacon's brother. Who also famously pissed his pants.
It's thematic piss.
Otacon's sister. Okay, so this happens, but I feel like we gotta just, like, take a step back here. We gotta talk about the Patriots, because that's, like, that's the next big thing that happens is you find the president. The president gives you a little dick tap, which, you know, whatever. but then he tells us about the Patriots, which is essentially the Illuminati. That it is like a cabal of incredibly powerful people who are above the government, and they control everything that happens, and the government and all of the positions in it are just fronts to make it look like this stuff is happening, when in reality it's all controlled by the Patriots. Blake, this was something that you referenced as, like, what the do I need to know about all this? It's getting in the way of my cool misinformation. What parts of this did you like, and what parts did you not?
I liked the part where the president said he's a pawn, and I was like, that checks out. That's cool. I don't know, like, shadowy cabal Illuminati shit. It's a victim of playing this in 2023. We've gone through so much of this garbage that I'm just like, it doesn't do much for me personally. I'm more interested in the president explaining his role in the country because of the Patriots. I thought that was pretty fascinating. But, like, unpacking, like, who could these 10 men be that control the government and finance and the news cycles? I'm like, all right, I got it. I get it. It just, I don't know. It just wasn't super compelling to me. I don't have anything smarter to say about it. I just think there are more compelling things in this game's espionage than the idea of the Illuminati.
Yeah. I think it's sort of cool that, like, the president is just, like, some, like, dickhead, and he's like, I don't know what the fuck I'm doing. I don't get it.
Yeah.
And he also kind of, like, admits that he's, like, just, like, not great as a guy. And you see that he's not great as a guy because he gives you a little dick tap, and he's like, okay, what are we doing? What is this? Hello, sir. It's, there's themes there. There's stuff in the design document, too, where it, like, literally, like, boldly states, like, the greatest evil in the world, the president of the United States. Like, it just says that, like, flat out.
I mean,
it's like,
okay.
Whoa, okay.
Thor, I'm glad you brought that up, because this is something I wanted to touch on. In this cutscene with the president tries to make Raiden kill him.
Yeah.
And then Ocelot kills him. But effectively, the president wants to die. And in the game, the president of the United States dies. And in Death Stranding, there is a moment where, correct me if I'm wrong, it's been a few years, Norman Reedus effectively is like, damn, president, you feel that bad, huh? I guess you should kill yourself, and gives him a gun.
Yeah, you just dump her in the trash and then you incinerate her and shit. That's
oh,
like the
well,
first
no,
thing
but
you
you're
do.
Thinking about... Well, because you're thinking about, like, Die Hard Man, right?
Right,
like,
I'm
at
thinking
the end?
About the end of the game. Yeah. But I forgot in the beginning of the game, the president died.
Yeah, well, you're the president of Jack Shit. Yeah. Best line ever written. Exactly. How can we say Kojima's a bad writer?
You're right. I take it back. But the end of that game, you can, I guess, read it as literally as you want, but there is a moment where Sam is like, damn, why are you crying? I guess you should die. So, I mean, there's a running thread throughout 20 years of Kojima being like Thor just said in the design Bible, the greatest threat to the world.
Yeah, there's like a few things. There's nukes are bad, poop and piss, and like America is scary and I don't really like it as an institution. Those are like the three sort of core themes that are in basically all of his games to varying degrees.
It's like, hey, guess what? You're never going to go wrong writing about how American politics are fucked. Like, you're never going to be off base.
That is something I disagreed with Agnes a bit on. She like really pushes back on Kojima writing about American politics because he's Japanese. And I was like, I don't know. Let the man cook a little bit. Like,
cook.
I'm pretty sure Japan's been pretty fucking affected by American politics. Yeah. Like, I think they're allowed.
Yeah, but I don't know. It's pretty interesting. Like, we talked a little bit, like, when 9/11 happened, Kojima was, like, really worried about this game coming out. He says he wanted to cancel it. There were several things changed in the game.
Surprisingly
and ultimately,
little, though. Y'all haven't gotten there yet, but there is stuff in the game where, like, damn, if this was GTA 3, they would have been, like, sued to shit, and it wouldn't have the game would have gotten banned or some shit, but not, it just got away with it.
Well, so, it's interesting, like, the thing people being super mad about in this game was Raiden and none of the political stuff. It's like, this came out a few months after 9/11, and the president, like, this is peak we love Bush in America. Yeah. I mean, okay, it's not, you get what I'm saying, for certain parts of America.
No, it was. I mean, his approval rating was like 80% after 9/11. Like, it was the most popular he ever was.
One of the biggest video games of the year comes out, and it's like, well, the president's getting fucking shot on screen, and the dude also sucks. It's like, some wild shit, like some undeniably I respect it type shit. It is one of the moments in this game that I was like a bit gobsmacked by, just like considering its time and place and culture when it came out.
Were you also reminded of a friend of the show, Leon S. Kennedy, who also shoots the president?
So I was going to bring that up as well. Leon Kennedy does murder the president in Resident Evil 6, which is also one of the coolest moments in video game history.
Yeah, I have like the idea of, there's stuff in this that I really like, and then there's stuff in this that I find is like almost, it's like missing the point or whatever, because it's like, so we find out there are two major things that the president tells us. One, the Patriots control everything. The government is a scam or a front, you know, all of that. Two, the way that they control everything is effectively through misinformation, that they control the flow of ideas, and because of that, they can keep everything in line. They suppress things that they don't like. They promote, you know, other things in favor of it. The whole idea of Big Shell being a cleanup operation is like fake news, you know. And what they're doing with Arsenal Gear, which is what Big Shell actually is like this supercomputer that is going to control all data. And is going to, you know, like nothing will be allowed to escape the level of influence that the Patriots have.
This is the stuff I found very fascinating. I don't particularly think it's Kojima predicting the future. I think people just, gamers need to read more books.
Yeah.
It's like propaganda existed before the internet, quite famously. But I do like this idea, and like Kojima is clearly, like a lot of media coming out at this point. I mean, an example that I think came out the same year, Pulse by Kiyoshi Kurosawa, has this like incredibly cynical view of the internet and what it was going to do to personal connection. And like, it is fascinating to see this game and its writers thinking about like how the internet will affect the news cycle and how it already has, because we see like Snake should be, he is a cult hero of sorts, but like they're wanting to influence the news to make him an eco-terrorist, to turn the tides against him, which goes against the objective facts of the story. I thought that was a really fascinating way of thinking about the internet and its like incoming influence and widespread like dissemination of information. You know, like within 5 years, the internet would just be where everyone lives effectively. And like him thinking about like, yeah, you don't have to print a web page. It doesn't take 12 hours to print, to write. You know, the like production is like vastly changed to get news out there to people. I thought it was really, really fascinating, especially playing this in 2024, you know, having gone lived through America in the Trump presidency where fake news became this just like fucking meaningless thing.
Yeah, so that's kind of like, it's that idea that is like the conflict in my head, because what I have a problem with, and I think is kind of always the thing that I take issue with in like political espionage writing, is like, I always think that things are not, the idea of these massive secret things happening, I think is this like weirdly almost optimistic view of politics, where like, you know, if we just talk about like the Illuminati, you know, where it's like, I had a high school English teacher who I loved, who once said, like, the president of the United States had oral sex in the Oval Office and they could not keep that secret. Mm-hmm. You think that like thousands of people across the globe are like keeping this massive thing secret and like no one can find it out? You know, I think it's the same kind of like QAnon thinking of like, the world is a puzzle box, and if I figure out all the clues, then I can solve it. It is like a type of conspiracy that I think is just like very naive, because the reality is like they're saying everything mm-hmm. they're doing. You know, it's like it's not actually hidden.
I 100% agree with what you're saying, Jacob. And the like not perfect counterpoint is just like, well, right, but a game that unpacks why passive voice and news writing is damaging to how we view like catastrophes and like terror is not interesting narratively for a game. You know what I'm saying? So it's like, I think granted, I work in journalism. It's game journalism, so it barely counts, but nevertheless. but like, I think I'm going in it with that background where it's like, okay, yeah, I don't think a shadowy cabal is news blasting out, you know, this fake news. But I am thinking about like when we're seeing the Israel-Palestine conflict right now, the way organizations are covering that, which I don't want to call it misinformation, but they, you are using passive voice to change the way people think about who is dying, who is, you know, inflicting damage, who the oppressor versus the, you know,
a lot of intentional word choices and things like that.
Exactly. Yeah. Thank you, Thor.
And it's,
that's what I'm sorry, Jacob. That's what I'm grabbing out of this more so than like, you know, I get what you're saying. And maybe, I'm sorry, I'm just kind of repeating myself.
No, but it's, I mean, and you're right. And it is this really weird fine line because like, hey, mm-hmm. guess what? Israel showed that fucking propaganda snuff film like in Raleigh last night to like a bunch of city council members. And so it's like, it's not like giant government propaganda campaigns are not happening. It's just like, we know, like, the weird Trump fake news thing was like, he could just, you would have all of the evidence there and he would just say, no, that didn't happen, and everyone would believe him. And it wasn't even like the news was being suppressed, although he was very like anti-journalist, but it was just kind of like, he could define reality for his supporters just by saying it. And that is also the case for Israel, for like whatever other issue you want to pick. And so it is this kind of like, it's both like a smarter and dumber future that Kojima is proposing here of like, it's like we need to do the cover up, where in reality it's like, I think the cover ups are largely unnecessary, and Arsenal gear like is being created just through like, you know, Silicon Valley algorithms of just like deciding what people want to see and then showing them more of that. And so it is like, it is so fascinating in like, you know, sci-fi is as interesting in what it gets wrong as like what it gets right. And so I think that this is like a really cool cultural object for like the specific view of the future of 2001 compared to like where we are now in the future.
It is also one of those things that like you run up against, I think, with like what would you call it, technophobic type sci-fi around this era, where it's like the cynicism around the internet often misses the importance of the internet, and like there's undeniable value to how quickly news can get out in the world these days. You think about like when natural disaster, granted now Elon's throttling how many tweets people can send, but when natural disasters happen, like go to Twitter to get the news, especially if you're in that affected area, that this game completely misses the value of that. And like that makes sense. That's probably less interesting narratively, or just not something Kojima wasn't thinking about Twitter at that time. But I think there is like an undeniable cynicism here that misses like the counter arguments. Does this make sense? I don't exactly know where I'm going with this.
I somewhat disagree, because I think the reason that they need Arsenal gear, Thor, this is, we'll talk about this forever, so please jump in. But like, I think the reason that they need Arsenal gear is because they were like, hey, the fact that Snake is alive and a hero got out there because of the internet. In the
That's
past,
a good point. Yeah.
They would have been able to stop this, but now they need this like super, you know, supercomputer to stop it because the internet is disseminating information faster than the sensors can control.
I think
it.
There's good things point. That would drastically change this conversation if y'all had beaten the game. So maybe there's some stuff you can hold
yeah,
out on.
We will just repeat this conversation next week.
It'll get
if
into
anything,
a lot of things, though.
This entire podcast, I think, has been building up to this one conversation. But
yeah.
Jacob Thor, help me out. What was the news stuff in Rising? Wasn't there a similar plot point?
I've only played Rising like 2 times. I know there's memes.
Okay.
The guy says memes. I know there's a guy who's like, the good old days of 9/11. I know that's a quote in there, but I forget the exact context of those quotes.
I mean, it was essentially that Armstrong also, who's the big bad, you know, senator.
Yeah.
He did also want to control the news media, you know, and he was kind of doing so, and you know, Raiden references that, like, the shit he's pulling is going to be like WMDs in Iraq, where it's like they're telling. So I don't think, I mean, the idea of memes in that game is sort of, I think this will be another example of like being able to talk about it more capably after next week's episode, but like it's doing the same thing. I think kind of interestingly, what Rising is doing is like almost so much closer to our reality, in just like they're not talking about a giant shadowy cabal, they're just talking about like what senators are doing. And so it's an interesting game.
Should we play that again? Maybe a bonus episode. We both play.
I've played that game 1,000,000 times, but hey,
I do love how ridiculous that whole like monologue is that Armstrong gives. Like, it's so over the top, and there's so much in there, so many quotes. It's so good.
It's so good. One of the best moments in a video game. Also, politically, the most confusing shit I've ever heard.
Completely incomprehensible, but Jake, also it rules.
I remember us talking about this, Jacob, one time, where it's like Armstrong will say one line, and you're like, yeah, kinda, and then he'll say the next line, and you're like, oh wait, no.
It's like I think that makes, you know, but it does make sense in the same way that like, you know, the right will use class consciousness way to like cudgel accusations of racism. You know, they'll be like,
they'll like quote MLK, but very selectively. And yeah.
Yeah. So it's like, I don't think that his incomprehensibility is actually like a problem for the scene, but it's like, yeah, he does not have a coherent philosophy.
Exactly. That game not written by Kojima.
No.
I wonder what that guy's also written.
We can we can talk to our guest next week about that, because I've actually had discussions with them in the past about this very thing. It's great shit. So this is all, you know, Arsenal gear is meant to keep the world as it is. And there's this other big theme here where, like, something that the president says, which is very weird, is, like, he acknowledges that the Patriots are bad, or, like, you know, it's probably bad that there's the shadowy cabal, but he's, like, but the power vacuum would be worse, you know? And so he's, like, you can't take them out, because then the world would just fall into anarchy. And so it's kind of this, like, humans need to be controlled sort of message that you're getting from him.
And I agree.
Blake, just plug Blake into the Matrix. He's ready.
Law and order, you know, that's my cup of tea.
Gosh. So then after this, it's almost like going back to like solid ground after this is a little disappointing. Because it's like, this is so...
swimming section. You don't really go back to solid ground.
10 comedy points. Very funny. Where it's like you get into what it feels like the game is about. And then it's like, okay, now go and fight Vamp in like a, you know, a water room or something.
Yeah.
Well, here's the first thing that I just want to call out before I've played it. Is the president gives Raiden a disc to, quote unquote, deactivate Arsenal gear, and I was like, I know what that shit does. I played Metal Gear Solid 1. The thing where Snake's like, great, I turned it off, and Liquid's like, no, you turned it on.
One of the funniest moments in a video game.
So time will tell if that happens again. And so the rest of the section is just kind of about Emma, what's Otacon's last name?
Emmerich.
Emma Emmerich, who is also working here and knows how to like do some computer stuff.
Here's the shit with Emma where I was like, get to the fucking point. I don't give a shit that she's scared of water. I don't care what kind of fucking chopstick she has in her hair. Look, great. I love character development as much as the next person. Emma means nothing to me. I don't give a shit that she moved to England. Why did her father die in the swimming pool, by the way? That makes no fucking sense. Kojima, I'm around. If you want to hire me as an editor, dude, you need an editor. This game would be 3 hours long after I was done with it.
But it's lacquered chopsticks. It's all the rage right now. But don't you need to know
and
that?
I don't give a shit.
Here's my main edit that I would make with Emma is if you're going to have Raiden hit on her constantly, don't make it look like she's 11 years old. what the fuck is going on?
Jacob is different culture. You can't criticize that.
Yeah, okay. Criticize that. That was another section where Annie was sitting next to me on the couch and she was like, excuse me, when he was like you should wear contacts.
And it was like, no, when he said that I was like, oh, Rose gonna be mad. And then when I went to save, Rose was like, are you fucking kidding me? And I was like, that's good writing. That's good stuff right there.
Oh, and then there's this whole conversation. Did you get the conversation with Rose about how Raiden wouldn't let her into his room?
Oh yeah.
Yeah, why is
and
he,
it
does he
and
have
it implied that he's like hit her. I wasn't, she yeah. said, it was the first time you raised your hand against me, so I didn't know if it was the threat of violence or actual violence, but it was like, gah. And then we find out that Raiden sleeps in an empty room with one bedroom and one desk and nothing
There's
else.
There's the Metal Gear Solid visual digital novel, something it's called like that. It's like, it was a comic book, and then it became a movie for the PSP, and it's on the HD collection y'all have, I think. I'm not sure. I think it is. It kind of goes into that a little more, but like in a very, very weird way where it like shows Raiden and Rose at home in their apartment in Manhattan. And it's like really awkward. And then it characterizes Raiden very differently as like this standoffish asshole who talks in like a 80s action movie accent. He's like, I don't care what you say, Rose. It's really odd.
Also, does that mean he has a second normal bedroom in the apartment?
Yeah, or do they just not sleep together?
I don't know.
No, she was like, you wouldn't come in the bedroom to sleep with me. You were in your bedroom.
The relationship is very odd because it both feels like they've known each other for a long time, but it also feels like they don't know each other at all.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is kind of a point, I think. But I'm also not entirely sure what it's trying to say.
Yeah, I don't know. I agree with what Patrick said last week, that it's like, it feels like a whole other story that you're experiencing. And I do kind of get excited when I save and then Rose says something and I'm like, oh, here we go. Here's some like weird relationship drama. But it is, I have no idea where it's going to resolve.
Weren't sort of like drama movies like a trend at the time? Sort of like rom-coms and like movies in that kind of tone of like problematic relationship-y big romance sort of movies. Maybe Kojima just saw that and he was like, I'm gonna put that in the game.
they are named after the Titanic characters.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. So. Oh, God, they are. Oh, my God, I didn't even think about that.
Jack and Rose, that's right.
Blake, Patrick brought this up last week. You got to edit that out or sound like you weren't listening.
Oh, yeah, of course. This is a Titanic character that I knew. Yeah, it's no big deal. Totally. I don't even know why you brought that up, Jacob. I already knew it.
I'm just making clean edits, just clean edit points there. Okay, this is a minor point. It seems like there is far more dialogue than they had the budget for in this game, because constantly two characters are standing next to each other and then will call each other on codec, which is just very silly.
Well, then you don't have to animate all of it.
Yeah, no, I mean, hey, look, it's genius, except for then we have to watch all of it happen.
The swimming section sucks, let's just skip past
it. It sucks. I do like when you open the door and Stillman's dead body is there. That's good, a cool stuff, good bit. Stuff,
good I like stuff. That there's a bunch of mines there. Like, how did those get there?
Why? And Raiden is like, who put those there? And Snake's like, I don't know, someone.
It's so bizarre. It's like those, like, underwater mines as well. Like, they leaked into the... But would they not have gone off?
Right. It looks like they're supposed to take out a submarine. Yeah. And instead, they'll do, like, a third of your health bar. Emma says that one of the pieces of knowledge that the Patriots have suppressed is knowledge of 60,000 genes. That human beings have 100,000 genes, but we think they only have, like, 40. Mm-hmm. Because the Patriots have suppressed the knowledge of the other 60. Where I was like, I don't know enough to know what that means.
You know how earlier I was like, what are the parts you don't have to put as much stock into? This is one of those where I was like, this is not important. Not going to worry about this at all.
I'm going to say it definitely is.
Of course. Fucking
60,000 genes, Blake, Hideo. Remember.
God damn it.
I don't know, gene is a theme of the game. But all the Metal Gear games have, like, all caps word themes. This one is gene. Yeah. One of them is meme.
Right, well, I thought the first one was gene and this one was meme. let's see.
Yeah, probably.
Okay, Metal Gear Solid, gene. Metal Gear Solid 2, meme. Okay. Metal Gear Solid 3, scene. Ooh. Metal Gear Solid 4, sense. Broke the rhyme scheme. Metal Gear Solid Peace Walker, peace. Metal Gear Solid 5, race/revenge.
Okay. Is all it? Right. I'm sure. Sure. Whatever.
Yeah, whatever. Here's a part that I did like. Emma's scared of bugs, and so you can spray them with a little spray to get them to move. Or you can simply do what I did, which is put her in a chokehold and drag her through the bugs.
I did not know you could do
elevator.
That.
Wow, that's cruel.
I wasn't sure what button you were supposed to press to like hold her hand, and so the first one I did was like square. And it's just like, sure. I threw her over, I judo threw her, and then I put her in a chokehold.
Well, that works.
Jacob, you were speculating if Raiden raises his hand.
Yeah.
Yeah, there we have the answer.
There we go.
And then the last section here is, there's not much story that happens. They need to get to a different strut of Big Shell, but it is maybe visually my favorite part of the game so far, because you leave you're on the outside of Big Shell, which is like a giant oil rig looking thing, and the sun is setting, and it is like, it's so atmospheric in that kind of perfectly PS2 way where there's just enough detail without being too much. It just looks awesome.
If you have your thermal goggles on too, which I used for this section, it looks so fucking cool with the sunset and everything. Oh, dude, this section rocked.
It's awesome. And then you can just call Snake and he snipes everyone for you.
And that rocks too. I wish that you could do that the whole game.
Thor, are there any goofy ass things you can do in the sniping section?
There's a few Easter eggy things you can see, I think. There might be someone pissing over the railing again or some shit. There's something like that. I think you can also use the directional mic there to hear some things, but I'm not entirely sure.
You can hear another guy taking a shit.
Yeah, that part's like late enough into the game where I kind of stop messing around usually. So I know less about it there. Because it's also not the most fun section, if I'm honest. I just kind of want to get it over with most of the time. But I do think there's a few Easter eggs there, I'm pretty sure.
And that's where we ended for this week. Next week, we are completing the game, which I'm sure is just like a nice, clean little wrap-up and won't introduce any new ideas or anything.
Nothing weird will happen.
Thor, what is your like ranking of the games? Or like, where does Metal Gear Solid 2 sit?
I know Metal Gear Solid 5 is my third favorite one. And place 1 and 2 would be either 2 or 3, but which order I would put them in, I can never quite decide on. Because I love playing 3, but I like 2's whole, like, vibe and story and stuff more. But I like playing 2 less. I don't think 2 is necessarily always a very fun game to play, which is why I play it on very easy, as I mentioned earlier.
There's a part in your recent video where you talk about, like, the look of a hallway on, like, the tanker section. And I got to that hallway, and first I thought, oh, this is the Thor hallway. But I was like, you're so right, you know, in that, like, the kind of... whatever place in graphics it was where it's like there was like a ton of work put into, like, faking how the lights bounced around and stuff, but it just looks... it looks like a picture or like a bat painting as opposed to like a real hallway.
I love shit like that. Like, it's definitely like a picture versus painting sort of thing where it's like, well, if you have like a natural lighting engine, you can just plop a point light in there and it'll figure it out in the shadows and stuff. And there's like tweaking you can do there. And obviously there's a lot of work that goes into that too. But they had to like duplicate like everything and then so that the mirroring is there and then like balance the fucking like the transparencies so that you can't really see it from the outside, but it's still there. And like, there's so much work that I had to go into, like, even just making the railings in that hallway like reflect and stuff like that. It is very much just like, yeah, like a painter who would have to know how like light bounces to like be able to draw it that way and stuff like that. It's pretty interesting.
Do you remember, this is off topic, but one of the things that they were showing off with the Fox Engine was just like a picture of an office.
Yeah.
And they were like, this is made in Fox Engine, and it looked, you know, perfect. And it's like, ah, they're still just making cool hallways. That's just what they do.
I have to Google that. I don't actually remember that. I remember seeing like a jungle. Oh, this shit. Yeah. The boardroom that they remade.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's like straight up where they like, that's like straight up the boardroom in their office. Yeah, and they remade it. Yeah. I mean, the tanker segment like reeks of like tech demo sort of shit to me, where there's like so much like the rain and stuff too, and the how the particles for the rain work, how they're like caked into the model, and how the wetnesses work on the decks, and like there's so much just like hardcore vertical slice tech demo, like look at all this shit we can do in just this little segment. Because the big show, it looks good, but nothing in the big show looks as good as everything on the tanker does.
It is really it's like that I can't remember which ImSim guy said it, but it's like make the city block game where it's like everything is, you know, you only do one city block, but everything is perfectly rendered.
I definitely say there's like ImSim-y elements to Metal Gear games for sure. You can shoot all the fruits and shit too, and stuff
yeah,
like
and
that.
Just kind of like the level of like, what if we put so much effort into every single room, and like, I think that the big shell part is less compelling because the rooms just don't have that. Yeah. You know, it's like I'm just kind of running through them, and it's like, sure, the room where the boxes all move around is like fun, but I never have to like interact with that mechanic.
No, because you can just go in first person and shoot all the guys and then just run through it. You don't have to like, I think that's so like, I started with like Twin Snakes, right? It has the first person aiming that like 2 introduced, and it completely breaks Metal Gear Solid 1. Because you can just go in first person and pop everyone from a distance and then just casually strut through the room. And I think it's interesting that like 2 is like, it's like they designed the levels with MGS1 in mind, and then the first person aiming happened. They were just like, oh, whatever. Like, I'm going to redo all this. It's very fascinating to see that same game that you think would be built around the first person aiming just isn't at all.
I think that totally... like looking at it, it's like, hey, and that's what happens when you have to make a game in 3 years like of this scale.
Because technically, if you look at it, like the box room is very interestingly designed in terms of what you can crawl under. You can move in synchronicity with the boxes so that they don't see you. There's a lot of stuff there, but you don't have to do any of it because you just shoot all the guys.
Well, Thor, if you had to leave us with like, what should we be thinking about as we play this next section? Like, is there a way to kind of prepare ourselves?
I'm trying to think of something that wouldn't be too spoilery. I'm just saying that, like, a lot of the stuff you were saying, Jacob, is, like, kind of on the right track. So maybe you can see some shit and you can be like, oh, damn, okay.
You can't wait.
You
can
be
very, I'd love
very,
to be
very satisfied with yourself or some shit. I don't know.
God, I hate when Jacob's right. That makes me so mad.
Well, look, here's a case where both Blake and I were right. It rocked having you on the podcast, oh, yeah. Thor.
Thanks.
Thank you so much
for
coming
for inviting
by.
Me.
Thor, and dear listeners, I implore you all to go watch Thor's stuff if you haven't. Thor, if I may gush for a second, I think there are a lot of good writers in games. I think very few have unique voices to amplify that good writing. I think you have a wholly unique voice to your writing that is, like, so good. You are one of my favorite writers in games. Oh, yeah. And I think about that Free Yuji Naka song all the time. I think it's the funniest shit. So it was awesome having you on. I'm a huge fan. So thank you
so
much.
So funny, I'm getting people who are like, actually, yeah, man, let him out. And I'm like, what? I wrote it as like a joke. Like, he seems like kind of an asshole by all means. I don't know.
He committed a crime. Yeah. That's so funny. Well, we'll put the link to your channel in the description. You created, we were talking about when Blake was going to pee, your soundtrack for Umurangi Generation, which is one of my favorite game soundtracks. Are there any other, like, projects outside YouTube that you want people to check out?
I did an album. It's on Bandcamp and Spotify and stuff. It's called Coconuts. It's pretty good. It's just under Thor High Heels. I'm very proud of it. It took, like, more than a year to make. I wouldn't mind if more people check that out, but otherwise not. Hey,
Something Rotten Army, get in there. flood that Bandcamp.
I've had Oni Chambara Origin installed on my computer for like a year now because of one of your videos. Maybe this will be the impetus I get to finally go play that thing.
Which one is that?
It sure is a game.
It's like,
it's
the girls.
Is it the Bikini Girl game?
Yeah. I love that shit.
I think the Xbox 360 one is called like Bikini Girl Zombie Slayers. That like describes the whole series pretty well.
Fuck yeah.
Why have we stopped naming games like this? Bikini Girl Zombie Slayers. What else do you need to
know?
What
more do you need?
All right. And thank you all for listening. We will be back next week with the whole game. And until next week, Blake, can you ask me real quick, is that Solid Snake?
Is that Solid Snake?
No, that is not Solid Snake. Right. Bye, everyone.
Bye.